Readers, writers, listeners, welcome. This is the Page Turners Podcast, and I'm your host, Miranda, an avid reader, a published author, and a longtime listener of podcasts. This is the Page Turners Podcast, Season 2, Episode 10. It's the most wonderful time of the year, and with it being the most wonderful time of the year, I wanted to give you, my incredible listeners, a gift, and that is the gift of another double feature. When I did the first of today's two episodes, I had no idea that they were going to connect really so perfectly, but when I did the second interview literally the next day, and they were both about the Girl Scouts, I just felt like it was the perfect opportunity for another double feature. So for part one today, we are chatting with a woman who was born in South Dakota, but raised in New Mexico. She shares her journey from growing up poor to becoming a NASA engineer, CEO of Girl Scouts, and a published author. Now there's no way you won't be inspired by listening to this incredible woman. Please welcome Sylvia Acevedo.
Well, first of all, I was born in South Dakota.
Woohoo!
And so I'm very proud of that. I was born at Ellsworth Air Force Base in South Dakota, and my father was in the military and he had been stationed there. So, you know, I have fond memories of South Dakota. And of course, because it was, you know, all my grandparents are from Mexico. My mom was born in Mexico. My dad was born in El Paso. And so it was really unusual for them to be in South Dakota, and they weren't really familiar. So as a result, you know, my parents bought all these, you know, souvenirs and memories of South Dakota, and I grew up with those, and it was really wonderful. And I like to kid people that I know all the presidents, the four presidents on Mount Rushmore, because my parents bought so many things and souvenirs that had that. So from a very young age, I knew the four presidents, but. I lived there for a couple of years, and then my family moved back to New Mexico, where we had other family. And, you know, I wrote a book, Path to the Stars. It's a middle school memoir, and I love your focus on literacy.
Thank you.
And so, you know, because I think it's so important to have books that are compelling and also interesting. And then, you know, being an engineer, I like to focus on STEM. So I really consider that book as kind of, you know, one opportunity to sort of encourage kids to think about pursuing STEM or math and science, because it's a great opportunity right now. But I was able to get my engineering degree, and my first job out of college was as a rocket scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. And I worked on two missions, and one of them is was to Jupiter, so the Voyager 2. So the iconic pictures we have of Jupiter with a big red storm dot on it, those come from that mission. So that was exciting. And then the other one was in the very early stages of this mission called Solar Polar Solar Probe. It is now, many years later, finally circling the sun. So I got to work on that. After that, I had the opportunity to go to Stanford University and I studied engineering. And I was one of the first male or female Hispanics to have ever gotten a graduate engineering degree from Stanford. I did that, and then I was right at ground zero of Silicon Valley and the internet age. And so I had a great career with IBM, Apple, Autodesk, software, hardware, networking. And then I went to Austin and lived there for 14 years. And part of that time I worked at Dell, part of the time I was a founder of a startup with three other engineers. And then I decided to use my powers for good in education. And that got me to Obama's White House, and I became a White House Commissioner for Education. And I was pleased that I was able to lead a change in federal policy. I was also on the National Board of the Girl Scouts, because Girl Scouts is very pivotal in my life. And I became CEO first. And I said, you know, I'm only gonna be interim until we find a permanent, well, 4 years later, I stepped down, and then I went back to technology. And so now I'm on corporate boards and doing public speaking as well. So in a nutshell, that's what I do.
That's incredible. I think we need like a round of applause for you. I'm so in awe of all of the things that you've done. I will have the ability to go and speak at a Girl Scout event coming up in Rapid City, South Dakota. And your book is what inspired that event of empowering women and empowering girls through literacy. And hearing about your story from that person who is putting on that event, I just knew that this was a story that I wanted to be able to help elevate and be able to help share. So I'm so incredibly excited that we get to hear more from you today. You've done so many incredible things. Wow, truly, that's amazing.
Well, thank you very much. Well, you yourself have done many things too. So I really congratulate you. You're also very persistent and resilient, which is very important. I think you just really had your eye on the prize of becoming Miss South Dakota, and you are Miss South Dakota after, a few years of effort, and that's okay. I understand that in my career, being a trailblazer, people think, oh, you're the first. Must be easy. Actually, that's not it at all. And it's a real challenge. So persistence and resilience are really important skills to have.
Absolutely important skills for anyone. But I want to know a little bit about how Sylvia Acevedo came to be. Where did your inspiration come from to dive into STEM and then to dive into becoming an author and all of the incredible, opportunities that you've taken part in your life?
When I look back, one of the pivotal moments for me was I got a phone call in the mid-2000s from a researcher at Stanford University. And they called me because they said, we're doing research and you're one of the first male or female Hispanics to have earned a graduate engineering degree. And they said, at the time, Stanford really wasn't recruiting in your part of the country. So how is it that A, you knew about it, and B, you got in, and not only you got in, you've had this amazing career, right? As a, a rocket scientist, as a tech executive, a philanthropist, all these things. And I didn't know the answer. And so the more they asked me questions, and luckily it was a really great researcher, and so she kept asking me questions, and she said, well, how did you get good at math and science? What were some of the things? And the more she asked questions, I realized a lot had to do with my experience at Girl Scouts. So, I was really fortunate to have been part of Girl Scouts. And on our, actually our very first camping trip, the after I ate some s'mores and I had a sugar high, and I was looking at the stars, and it was like the beautiful skies in South Dakota, beautiful, beautiful night stars. And I was looking at them and I just thought they were twinkling lights. And my troop leader, she sat down next to me and she pointed out there were constellations, the Big Dipper, the Little Dipper, planets, stars. I had no idea. So later on, months passed, we were earning badges. And she suggested that I earn a science badge. And I said, no. Nah. And she said, remember, I saw you looking at the stars. So I earned a science badge and did it around space. And one of the things that I did was make a model rocket. And I failed many times. And I'm really grateful for the Girl Scout experience because if I had been in a regular classroom and I had failed six times, I think that the teacher would have said, Sylvia, I don't think this is for you. But because it was in Girl Scouts, failure is first attempt in learning. We just solved the problem. And by solving the problem, I actually learned, problem-solving skills and identifying what the real issue was, solving for that. And when I finally got that rocket to go up in the sky, I said, I can do this. I can do science and math. And so that was a real pivotal moment. And so after that, I really began pushing quite a bit on, when the teacher would assign even problems, I would do the even and odd. And there were a couple of years that I pestered my teachers so much that they just gave me the teacher's guide for math and just said, here, go for it. And then the other thing, and you'll read about this in the book, but I grew up in a we were very close to the border in Mexico, and a lot of my family is from Mexico. So we had a very traditional family. And my father in particular had very strong views, and he and I clashed quite a bit. But I also had an older brother, and my father, favored the boy. And So I became very competitive with my brother. And this is really important because what I realized was I tried to do everything he could do, right? And so there was something in my brain that said, and I like science and math, and I was very competitive with my brother, and I always tried to do what he did. And I remember thinking, all I see is men doing these things, but that's kind of like my brother, and I can do whatever he can do. So then I focused on what is it that they were good at. And what they were good at is science and math. And so I think that's what kind of like triggered in my very young brain that I could do these things. And then in addition to that, in Girl Scouts, I learned the very important skills of persistence and creating opportunity. And my troop leader, she realized that culturally coming from that kind of very strong Mexican household, children don't usually engage adults first. They wait for adults. Well, if you can imagine in the cookie program, that's kind of a hard way to sell cookies. So she realized that. And she said, okay, Sylvia, a couple things. One, never walk away from a cookie sale until you've heard no three times. And that is probably some advice that changed my life. Because from that very young age of 7 years old, I always started to look at how do I solve the problem? How do I get to common ground? How do I find kind of that intersection of what they're interested in, what I'm interested in? And so that persistence developed from that, never walk away until you hear no three times. And in my career, that was invaluable advice because many times as a trailblazer, people weren't expecting to see me in certain roles, and or so they wouldn't hire me, or they, pass me over. But I had that persistence and resilience to solve for the problem and to, get hired or create that opportunity. The other one was she also taught me how to create opportunity. And that sounds really simple, like when you break it down, like set a goal, break it down into smaller pieces, and when you get stuck, ask for help. But unfortunately, my family had a lot of struggles with money. And, one time we actually ran out of money and had to live with a family. And so we didn't know how to create opportunity. And so learning that lesson in Girl Scouts of how to create opportunity was really life-changing for me. So that when my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Baldwin, showed me a picture of Stanford and I saw the green roof, I mean, the green hills, the red tile roof. And I thought, living in the desert, I'm like, I want to go there. Then she walked to my desk and she said, you could do it, Sylvia. It's one of the best schools in the world and you can do it. And, that 9-year-old said, okay, what's the goal is that? And I broke it down, realized I had to get really good grades and do extracurriculars, but I did. And, I was able to graduate from Stanford. So when I look back, and I'm very grateful for that conversation with the researcher, because it caused me to really be contemplative and figure out, why is it that I'm so different than a lot of my relatives?
I'm also a pretty competitive person. I competed for Miss South Dakota 5 times. So I appreciate that your mind was, how can I find those opportunities? How can I push through? And I love that Girl Scouts was such an integral piece of that. And you talked a lot about creating opportunity and persistence and resilience. And I'm sure that those were probably incredibly helpful then when moving into the role of an author and writing your own book. So I want to dive a little bit more deeply into what that process was like. Tell us a little bit about your book and what it was like to move from engineer to author.
Yeah, so great question. So I had been an engineer and then I'd had some success. And then I noticed that all these people in business suits came to look at some of the work that I had done. And I thought, I want to be one of those. And so I worked really hard to move myself up into being an executive. And after I had had some success with that, and I was an entrepreneur and was able to be part of a group that sold a company, I had choices. And I began talking to school groups about, what it was about my path. And one time I was speaking in California, and there was this, after my talk, there was a really long line of kids. And I made a joke and I said, I think that's the line for lunch. And they said, no, that's the line of kids that want to talk to you. And I remember thinking, okay, I have time today to stay. But I thought, there needs to be a book. And a lot of the kids would say to me, how come I don't know about you? And so that's when I decided to write a book. Now, here's the thing, I'm an engineer. And along the time or along the road, I had learned to give presentations using things called PowerPoint so that you kind of distill your ideas so that you can convey your message. And I got really good at that. And so when I thought about writing a book, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I just looked at a blank screen and I said, I don't know how to start. So what I did was I created a presentation of what I thought my book would be like. And then I broke it down into different chapters. And then I illustrated it with photos. And then what I also did is I said, you know, I represent kind of the rising generation of America, especially kids of my background around the country. One in four kids under 18 has Hispanic heritage. And then in some states like Texas, it's every other kid under the age of 18. So I thought, you know what, this is going to be valuable for every kid, especially girls, but also for kids of this rising generation. So I did the demographic analysis. And then I found out that there was going to be an event in New York with authors meeting publishers and writing agents. And I thought, okay, I'm going to that. So on my own, I invested and I went to New York and I had this presentation. So most people, well, all, everybody but me was pitching their book idea and they had their chapters and stuff. And instead, I like whipped out my computer and then I did this PowerPoint presentation. And I showed them that this book would be a really good book for them because it would help them sell a lot of books. And they were like, okay. So I got two incredibly strong offers that day. And then they said, well, can we read the first chapter? I was like, oh, I don't have that. I haven't written that. And they're like, well, that's kind of important. So I had decided to do a middle school memoir because middle school to me is like that elevator door closing. And I wanted my book to like be that hand in the elevator that stopped it. So it's like, here, wait, before you decide not to take that math elective or not to take that science elective, you know, like consider it because you'll have so many more choices. It doesn't mean you have to be an engineer or scientist, but there's going to be so many industries that rely on that. So having a little bit of knowledge will really open up opportunities for you. That's kind of why I thought middle school. Well, you know, I had just done technology. I didn't work with middle school kids. I mean, I spoke to groups. So I hired somebody and, you know, working because I had already broken the book down into chapters. And so she and I wrote the first chapter and submitted to that with a detailed proposal. And so I'm pleased to say, you know, it's kind of an eclectic approach, but it was very successful. And the book was really, you know, when it came out in 2018, it was really a bestseller. And I'm really pleased that to this day, a lot of schools are using it. In fact, this year, this summer, I created a teacher's guide so that teachers, you know, based on the national standards, could use this book to help teach their kids in 8th grade for English language arts. So, and that's publicly available. It's on my website. But, you know, I felt really committed to that. But it's a different journey. I think a lot of people think, oh, I just sat down and wrote. I took a very different approach.
I love that though. I love that you kind of went about it differently because I feel like that's sort of a thread that I'm learning as you tell me a little bit about yourself and about your life, is that you kind of look at things maybe a little bit differently than somebody else would. And so I feel like that's very fitting for you becoming an author as I kind of get to know you and as our listeners get to know you a little bit better.
Well, thank you. You know, I realized that, you know, what are you good at and kind of lean into what you're good at. And what I was really good at the time is, you know, PowerPoint presentations and telling that story. So that's where I leaned in.
I love that. So that kind of dives right into the three pieces of my initiative from so my initiative for the year, Paige Turner's Fall in Love with Reading has three pieces: access, education, and representation. So I want to talk a little bit more about that representation piece, especially on why you telling your story is so important, especially for that generation that you were talking about that's growing up and needing to hear, you know, your background and your story specifically.
You know, thanks for that question. It's really very important. And when I think about my own history, I realized, yeah, I'm a trailblazer, but there were a lot of people that helped pave the path. So I, I just realized I was one of the first to walk through that door of opportunity, but there were a lot of people that helped pave that. And also, where I got a lot of inspiration was I grew up in a rural desert town at the time, and there was a very small library. And I loved the library, loved to read, and reading was so important to me. And so there were hardly any books about women. And the two books were about Florence Nightingale and Clara Barton. And I read everything about Clara Barton and Florence Nightingale, so much so everybody thought I wanted to be a nurse. But what I realized was they actually were both systems thinkers. And remember, I'm a systems engineer by background. So it's like systems thinking. So when I delved into the history of Florence Nightingale, at the time, girls were not allowed to learn math. And her father taught her math and statistics. And so she became a nurse, and she was in the battlefield. And she saw so many people dying. She said, there has to be a better way. So she created the triage system that we use now. And people resisted it because she, the nurse, created it. So then she did statistical analysis to prove that if they implemented her methods, fewer people would die. And they denied it again. And then she did something very innovative. She took her data and she said, how can I help people understand it? And she thought, okay, a picture. So she hired a cartographer, which is a map maker, and they created a chart that represented the data that depicted, you could just see it. Wow, if you implemented her triage methods, many fewer people would die. And when they did that, they couldn't deny it because there it was evident. And it's interesting because she hired a cartographer, they created the, a depiction of the statistics was a chart. Because what do map makers make? But they make a chart, right? And so that's why when you're on Excel and they call it a chart. But it came back from Florence Nightingale. So that, and then as a result of her, it changed the course of the war. Many people, fewer people died. History doesn't remember her that way. They remember her as a nurse, but actually she was a real role model. And she became the first woman inducted in the Royal Statistical Society. So that was really cool. The other one was Clara Barton. And I loved Clara Barton. Yeah, she started the American Red Cross. But her systems thinking was during the Civil War, she realized that instead of bringing all the supplies to every battlefield, create a central hub, a warehouse, and then only send out exactly what you need. That makes a lot of sense now, but then the hub and spoke method had not been developed. And because of the railroad, they were able to deploy the supplies much more rapidly than they had previous to the railroad. So she was really innovative that way, and the army then implemented her methods. In addition, she created the first aid kit. And so I really liked her systems thinking. So, people think, oh, the angel of the battlefield, you want to be a nurse. No, I like the way she did systems thinking. So those books, to a girl that had no other role models, there wasn't anyone that looked like me that was female or anything in those programs, but they really served as just like inspiration that I could do that. So I really look to Florence Nightingale and Clara Barton, and I really believe in the power of books, especially for kids, where you can't, if you don't see it immediately around you, you can look for historical examples of people who did that. So for me, that was really incredibly important to have that kind of inspiration. So now I said, there's a lot of kids who are really inspired by me, and that's really one of the reasons I wanted to write the book. And for a lot of women, especially in technology, the industry that I really worked in, there's very few women. And I remember being, my first job, there wasn't even a bathroom. If you've seen the wonderful movie Hidden Figures, there's a scene where the women had to run to a bathroom. Well, I didn't even have a bathroom. So I just said to myself, okay, I'm going to not drink a lot of water. And then at lunch, I'm going to take a bike in. And at lunch, I'm going to ride my bike. And 6 weeks later, they finally brought a bathroom, a porta potty, a brand new porta potty, and it said hers on it. So, I didn't give up. I didn't complain. I just focused on, being the best engineer I could be, and then just doing the work. And so they finally relented and put in my my own bathroom. So, it's I thought about the kinds of stories and how important they are for kids who say, well, I'm the only one, or there's no one like me. How can you get through that? How can you be persistent, resilient? How can you solve the problem for yourself and for the group that you're working with? And so that became, a really important reason of why it was important for me to write the book.
I love that. I think that's so incredible and so very true. It was important for you to write that book. And I think for anybody listening who thinks maybe I have a story to tell, you do. It's important for you to tell that story, whatever it may be, because you're going to, somebody is going to see themselves within the pages of your book and understand your story in a way that others may not. And some may just love it just because, but I think that's true. I think it was important that you wrote your book, Sylvia, and I'm incredibly honored that I get a signed copy soon, and I cannot wait to read it. I think it's going to be hugely impactful.
Well, I thank you very much. And if there's any teachers out there, you can easily contact me on LinkedIn or on my website. There's the downloadable teacher's guides, so you could use it and help teach your kids. And I'm very proud to have been from South Dakota, and proud that you're now Miss South Dakota representing the state.
Thank you. South Dakota must have some incredible, incredible women coming out of it, I tell you.
I know, and you're a great example of that.
Oh, thank you. So you mentioned that when you were a kid, you were a big reader. Where did your love for reading come from? Where did that stem from in your childhood?
Actually, because I was born in South Dakota, my mother was monolingual Spanish speaking at the time. And so when she returned with our family to New Mexico, one of the first things she did was find somebody who could teach my brother and I English. And we're actually Baptist. I think a lot of people think we're Catholic, but we're Baptist. And she found a Spanish-speaking Baptist missionary in the Las Cruces area. And so she created an early pre-K dual language, class for my brother and I. And so my first song in English was Jesus Loves the Little Children. And I learned, the alphabet and all, all sorts of things from her, and I'm very grateful. So that when I entered into Head Start, I already had a base of English, and not only that, I also knew the alphabet. And then my father was a huge reader, and he used to take my brother, but not me, to the library. And then the other thing is he and I wanted to go, and my father said, no, you have to save money, because if you lose the books, you're going to be responsible. So at the time, he said you had to save $5, and that to me just seemed like a huge amount of money. But I got a bank. It was in the shape of a cat, and I went around. I did any chore, anything, just to save money to be able to get a library card. And so I was able to, read. And the other thing, my Head Start teacher did that was really good is she noticed I wasn't a craftsy person. She noticed that arts and crafts I didn't really like, but that I really liked the books. And so during show and tell every week, she said, Sylvia, you can talk about the book you're reading instead of, showing what you've made from popsicle sticks or with clay or whatever. And then she said, I want you to practice with your mom. So that was great. Reinforcement of Spanish English, that dual language. But I would tell her about what was happening with, Dick and Jane and their dog Spot and Sally's birthday party and all this stuff. And I think that just really cemented that love of learning for me at that very young age.
That's an incredible
And
teacher.
reading books.
Yeah, and that's an
Yes.
incredible teacher to do that, to recognize that in a student and see, this is Sylvia, especially you at that age, had such a passion for reading and to want to elevate that and highlight that. And who knows, maybe because you talked about Dick and Jane and their dog Spot and their birthday party, maybe another kid was inspired to want to know more and to read more. And I just think that's a pretty incredible teacher to recognize that and to elevate that.
Yeah, I know. I'm very grateful that she did. I
Definitely.
still remember her name, Mrs. Davenport.
Oh, well, thank you, Mrs. Davenport.
Yes, true.
So this is sometimes the hardest question that I ask authors and sometimes the easiest, but do you have a favorite book? Is there a favorite book of yours?
When I was a kid, I entered into a contest, and I was in third grade, and I love to read. And so our third grade teacher said, we're entering this contest and you have to read all these books. And there were the Railroad Kid books, all these books, and I read them. And I would dutifully write down that. And at one point I noticed I was reading the most books. And then when it came to the final days, my teacher, Mrs. Edge, said, it looks like we have two people, and I think, this other boy read more books than you. And I thought, that's just not possible. And it wasn't, it was just sort of like, no, it's just not right. And so what she did that was really good was she asked us about the books we read. And it turns out the little boy had not told the truth, and he had just written down names of books without reading them. And she didn't shame him, but she just said, well, Sylvia, congratulations. So, that was a really good lesson for me about speaking up for yourself. Being honest, obviously, is really important. But, if you're going to say something, you got to stand behind it. And so that was also really important. So the book that I was given as a reward for reading, because of course that's what you're going to get at the end of a reading contest as a book,
Of course.
was this book. And she knew I liked science, so she gave me this book about George Washington Carver. I had no idea who George Washington Carver was, but he was a peanut farmer and from the South, and he had really help revolutionize a lot of the agricultural industry so that people could have a livelihood, especially after the slaves were freed in after the Civil War. And he actually, did so many groundbreaking scientific studies. So it was really interesting to me. So for that, for a really long time, that was one of my favorite books. Of course, I always liked everything by Claire Martin and Florence Nightingale as well. And now I'm still a voracious reader. I read a lot. I read a lot more than I watch videos or movies. So I enjoy reading.
How do you think we ignite that passion for reading in the next generation and keep that going, keep that sustained for people as they get into adult life and get older? How do we do that? Do you have any ideas?
It's so important for kids to have that time to process. And even though when I was at Girl Scouts, I was really big into technology, and we created so many new badges, 146 in my tenure, which was more than ever in their 100 plus year history. But 126 of them were around STEM. But even with that, I was very conscious to ask the team to develop those badges so that much of them could be done offline, not online. So teach the concepts of cybersecurity, of coding, in a way that doesn't involve you looking at a computer and involves engaging with others. And that's really how a lot of girls love to learn. And as a result of that, we had tremendous success. My last full year, over 1 million STEM badges were earned and
Wow.
180,000 in cybersecurity. And we really focused on doing hands-on activity to teach the cyber concepts. And I bring that back because I think right now so many kids are really literally addicted, unfortunately, to their d digital devices. So their brain has been hardwired. So you have to unwire yourself from that. And I think reading is one of those great activities that really calms your body down, calms your brain down. But it doesn't give you that immediate satisfaction. So it's important for young kids that parents begin, or caring adults around them begin reading with them, and associating some pleasure from that activity, that they're going to get a reward from that, they're going to, it's kind of a way to self-soothe is to read. Because right now, without that, they're self-soothing by scrolling on their computer and getting those dopamine hits. So having time that's very conscious about putting the devices down. And then also finding things that are very relevant to them. And right away, you can't go from being addicted to a digital device to than reading a novel because they'll be like so bored. So you have to help them understand, start with, shorter stories, start with other things that help them, because it's very important for their brain development, for critical thinking, for obviously mood regulation, emotional regulation. There's so many things that are very helpful in addition to what the things they learn. So once they realize that, that this gives them pleasure, that allows them to, maybe they don't think, oh, this allows me to self-regulate, but it allows, I enjoy this, I'm getting pleasure, or to do it with, an adult. This is their time with their adult, their caring adult. This is their time with their sibling. This is their time with their friend. That's so important for them. So, begin by reading things that are easy. I mean, a lot of kids are like, oh no, I just want to YouTube it. Yes, okay, but like this whole process of ingesting, critical thinking, analysis, thinking about the whole story arc, it's so very important for kids. And I think about that in my own life. That's one of the reasons not only did I like reading, but I loved math. In my book, the editors were wanted to include the fact that I didn't really get along very well with my father. And so we really butted heads. And they treat it very, I think, appropriately for a middle school age. But one of the ways I self-soothed was by doing math. Now I look back and I realize, your emotions are on one side of the brain and your analytical thinking is the other. So I was very emotional around my father. And then when I did my homework in math, especially, I felt better. I
Right,
calmed
you could
myself down.
use the
I
other
self-soothed.
side.
Yeah. And so, I tell people, I did so much self-soothing with math that I became a rocket scientist. So that kind of gives you an idea of my challenges with my dad. But, that was a really important time for me. And it really helped develop my brain in so many important ways. And reading does that fundamentally for kids, because instead of somebody telling you how to imagine this scene, you get to create it in your own mind. You get to, think about how would that feel for somebody without seeing how an actor decided that that's how that person would feel in that book. So, I think it's so important for kids to really ignite in their brain their imagination. And I think reading really allows that. And then I think to get over that addiction, small groups, I think it's important to do that small group and to also set limits around how much technology a child uses. And I know that's really hard, but I think if you create really engaging activities, I think that's so important. And that's one of the things I really liked about our focus at Girl Scouts was we made sure that we focused that girls were home human beings, not human doings. Really try to have hands-on activities that weren't all about just using technology. Yes, they helped them at a point to use technology better, but they didn't always, it wasn't always grounded by looking at a screen. And then what I loved is we also had like the fun focus on outdoors and engagement. And I remember this great bridging ceremony where thousands of girls came to Northern California to cross the Golden Gate Bridge. And they had a big circle. And in that circle, all the girls threw their mobile devices. And for hours, I saw girls just playing and being there. And no one was taking a selfie. No one was like, let's get this video shot. They were just being. Another time, I was in Alaska. And, parts of Alaska camping, there's like no cell phone coverage at all, right? And these girls had gone out on a hike and they came upon a moose who gave birth to two baby moose, and that's really unusual for a twin birth. And I said, oh my gosh, did anyone take pictures? And they looked at me like, no. And I said, well, what'd you do? And they go, we experienced it. And I was like, yes. And I thought, that's just so great. You really just experience it in the moment.
Definitely. I love that you mentioned just being and imagination and escapism, because I think those are huge pieces of reading as well. You know, not only the information that you can take in, but just allowing your brain to kind of escape and to imagine. And like you said just now, with putting away a device, just be. I think that's a really important piece of literacy and of reading as well, is that it just allows you to kind of step away, use your brain in a different way for a little bit. And I agree. I think that's something that we're missing and we're kind of lacking in today's society.
Yeah, it, for me, getting a good novel and reading it, sometimes I have a hard time putting it down. It's like getting a massage. After I read it, I'm just so relaxed. So, you know, there are just so many benefits, but, you know, clearly allowing your brain to really, you know, get deregulate to sort of calm down is a very important part of reading. But also, it's an important part of learning too. So for students, they'll do a whole lot better than just trying to chat GPT everything and getting a quick answer that way. But using their brain to help solve problems or to understand or even to be able to imagine how would they interpret a scene? How would they solve a problem? How would they approach a certain situation? And that is kind of the uniqueness of them. You know, we don't want you to be just like everybody else. If you're doing it the way they did it, that's what their path was. What is your path? What is unique to you? What expresses you? And I think that is why reading is so important because you're able to interpret and synthesize for yourself.
Oh, I love that. Yes. Everybody take a second to go back and listen about 30 seconds and just take that in one more time. Oh, I'm so inspired by you, Sylvia. Truly. I think I could listen to you all day. I have a question. I never did Girl Scouts. I grew up in a really small town in South Dakota, and we didn't have a Girl Scouts troop near us. Are there patches for reading and for literacy? I know there's STEM ones now, which is incredible. Are there patches for reading?
There's a lot of the badges that focus on things like critical thought, telling a story, and actually some of our STEM badges are really about, and some of them in cybersecurity are really about how do you really get to the source of what is accurate versus just what you see on the internet. So right now, I don't think we have any per se literacy badges per se, but there's a lot of badge work around critical thought, engagement, problem solving, which are kind of along the same lines.
Definitely. Well, in
But you
reading
know, I've been away from the organization a few years, so they may have some, so I don't know.
that is true. And reading is a piece of that. You know, I talk often and everybody who listens has probably heard me say this a million times, but reading is a foundation and literacy is a foundation for everything you do. And so it ties into everything, into STEM, into cybersecurity. So I think it's really incredible that there are badges that focus on that so that young women can find their space and can find what they're passionate about and be able to, you know, pursue that in the future if that's something they so choose. And to be able to pursue that and experience that at such a young age, I think is incredible. I wish that I'd had the opportunity to be a part of Girl Scouts, but I think Miss America and the Girl Scouts actually have some very similar ideals. So maybe I'm getting it a little bit later in life.
Yeah, and you know, you definitely have the courage and the confidence, and you're really trying to make the world a better place. And that's really at the core of the mission of Girl Scouts.
Incredible. Incredible. I wish that we had all of the time in the world because you mentioned at the beginning of this episode too that you were a commissioner for education under the Obama administration. I would love if you could just touch on what that means really quickly because I think that's probably another incredible piece to the story of who Sylvia is and why, you know, literacy and education are just so important.
Yeah, you know, when I was tapped to be a White House commissioner, somebody gave me great advice. They said, when you're working with the federal government, just focus on one thing. It's so big, it's so vast. Just focus on one thing. So most of the folks, especially in education, were thinking about all sorts of, you know, great programs. I just focused on one because I remember the importance of early childhood education, Head Start. And now there are a lot of kids in Head Start that English is not their first language. But at the time, federal funds could only be used for curriculum in English. So we did a lot of research. We had different conferences where people came, and it turns out the research showed that a dual language approach would not only strengthen a child's home language, but they would learn English quicker and better and faster. And I thought, well, gosh, that's the right thing. And so, in addition, so I knew I'd have to get other supporters. So, in addition to education, the Department of Health and Human Services was very interested. in getting kids to learn English quicker and strengthen their home language. But the big one that was really a big supporter was the Department of Defense, and they have a huge flagship program. And they said, you know, higher education begins in lower education, which is in early childhood. And they were big supporters because they wanted to be able to protect America from those who might do us harm. And having native English speakers who also were fluently native in other languages was a great way to protect America. So I had those groups come together and support changing that federal policy so that federal funds could be used if a early childhood teacher so desired or required because of her class to use dual language curriculum. So I really like that because I'm also an engineer and it really scales so that millions of children could be really impacted. And just last week I was speaking to some educators and they were talking about their dual language curriculum in early childhood and how it was part of this federal program. And I thought, they don't even know I had anything to do with that. So it really warmed my heart.
That's incredible. Oh, man. If somebody wants to learn more about you, Sylvia, and read your book, where can we find that information?
So you can find it obviously on Amazon, on HarperCollins website, as well as Barnes and Noble. Hopefully you can find it at your local bookstore and also your local library, and hopefully in schools as well. I know a lot of schools have copies in English and in Spanish if you need that in your local library. So I really encourage you to look online and you'll find the book. And it's also in an audiobook as well in English.
Fantastic. I think I would be remiss if I didn't ask this final question. Sylvia, do you have any advice for somebody who's listening or reads your book and they want to tell their story? They want to, kind of be Sylvia Acevedo and do the things that you did. What is one piece of advice that you have for someone who may be listening?
Thanks for that question. And I think the most important advice is the first person you have to convince that you can do it is yourself. Because if you haven't convinced yourself, it's really hard to convince anybody else. But if they see that desire, that passion, that I'm going to do it, the Gotawanas, I'll do whatever it takes to make this happen, it's really hard to say no or to stand in your way, as you've discovered as Miss South Dakota. So, that thing is that just that drive and that focus, the first person you have to convince that you can do it is yourself. And if you think about it, like for me, to imagine that young girl whose family had a lot of challenges with poverty, had a health care really bad challenge with her family, who came from, all my grandparents are from Mexico, my mom was from Mexico, grew up in a Spanish-speaking household. You don't think CEO, you don't think corporate board member, you don't think White House commissioner, you don't think CEO of Girl Scouts. But all of that was possible because as a child, I thought to myself, I can do this. And I felt I could do this. And so they can too. Whatever their dreams are, whatever your dreams are, you can make them true.
Thank you so much for joining us for the Page Turners Podcast double feature. Make sure that you keep an eye out for the next episode. And until then, leave a review, share with a friend, and check us out on social media at Miss America SD to keep up with all things literacy and falling in love with reading. Catch you next time.